From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The budget outlined today is the budget Illinois can afford. We must be willing to take actions we'd rather avoid and make decisions that may seem unpopular in the short run, but serve the best interests of the people of Illinois in the long run.
There's a good number of human service providers that are providing basic services for disabled kids and for seniors and people with alcoholic problems. All those things are proposed apparently to be a massive cuts as well. So that doesn't sound very compassionate.
I have two differences of opinion with the governor. Number one concerns the elimination of the deficits. Governor has said that he feels that he can eliminate the deficits just by cutting state services. I disagree. The second point of difference with the governor relates to pensions and the spending of the anticipated savings, where I think the governor proposes to engage in conduct which I would consider to be reckless.
That's House Speaker Michael Madigan. Then we heard Senate President John Cullerton, and before that, Bruce Rauner giving his budget message this past week to the Illinois legislature. Rauner says Illinois needs to go down a responsible spending path. We'll talk about that on this week's edition of State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us is Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, Brian Mackey, reporter for WUIS and Illinois Issues, and our guest this week joining us from his office in Chicago, Greg Hines, political columnist at Crane Chicago Business. Greg, thanks for spending some time with us.
My pleasure.
You've heard a lot of budget addresses through the years, Greg. This one, a new governor in town, a slightly different tone. What were the impressions it left on you?
Well, Bruce Rauner, during his campaign, promised that he was going to shake up Springfield. And boy, if this address is any indication, he intends to carry through on that. I mean, he threw the gauntlet right down. He said, hey, I'm not going to ask for any more new money, any additional money, at least not now. I'm going to give you a budget that's balanced strictly on cutting, and maybe we'll talk about some more money later, maybe not, but there's going to be some conditions. So that's pretty bold stuff, given that he cut pretty close to 18-19% out of what it would have been otherwise.
And we'll now hear a lot of people saying, well, we can't handle those budget cuts, certain types of social services, that program won't go on. But he does face a legislature that's Democratic, and not only just Democratic majority, but supermajority that could do a veto-proof budget of any type, theoretically, at the end of the legislative session. It sets it up for a debate over some different policies. And House Speaker Michael Madigan, while being polite, says in this instance he thinks there needs to be some revenue thrown in, and then his idea to change the Constitution he called reckless.
Yeah, I was a little taken aback at how vigorous the speaker was. Springfield conventional wisdom is that it's John Cullerton and the much more liberal Senate who are going to take the lead on this, but Madigan seemed to express some strong disagreements. But we'll see. I'm not completely convinced that the two chambers, the Democratic leaders of the two chambers, are fully on the same page. If you remember, they were quite opposed and fought for well over a year over pension reform a couple of years ago before they finally passed a bill. How this turns out is really up in the air. There's all kinds of balls. One that's caught my attention is the fact that even though the governor keeps saying this is a shared sacrifice budget, the effect of this combined with the repeal of the temporary income tax increase lets rich people pretty much off the hook. They get a big tax cut, but they don't lose any services to speak of. But we'll see how it plays out. It's going to be a fascinating year.
And well, that's exactly what the House Speaker, I think, is getting into when he reintroduces this notion of taxing millionaires' income. It's a hit at, you know, rich people and, of course, one of the richest, Bruce Rauner himself. It wouldn't do anything for this year's budget that would require a constitutional amendment. And so Madigan knows that very well. This is all one big play. And what we've heard from both he, from Cullerton, from the Republican leaders, you know, it's funny because the Democrats say it's not dead on arrival. But let's be clear, it is. And you're never going to get a governor's budget proposed and then fully passed through just as he presents it. So this is really the starting game. And what Rauner has here, he's got a whole lot of cuts. I think he did very much leave open the door to new revenue. He did not introduce any. And that is notable because he had, even when he was campaigning, explored and proposed expanding what Illinois puts a sales tax on in terms of services. So it's clear he's there, but it's not going to come until Illinois explores all of these cuts first. And it will be deeper. I mean, this is the kind of budget that some people had wanted Governor Quinn to have introduced previously to kind of make the case for reaching into people's wallets before you ask people to pay more, show them why.
Well, actually, I would say that this is probably the most cold-hearted, cruelest, despicable budget plan proposed in modern Illinois financial history, going back to the time that the income tax was enacted in 1969. Now, a caveat, Bruce Rauner had no choice but to do that. And as a matter of fact, I would argue he violated the budget law anyway. The budget law says that you can only propose a budget, if you're the governor, based on the money you expect to have coming in. And that's what he did. He based it on his expectations of the money coming in, and he had to make those cuts. Where it's equally as dishonest as the budget that the Democrats adopted for the current fiscal year, he did not follow the budget law that requires you to appropriate money according to what the current law is. So, for example, he's saving $2-plus billion, mm-hmm. he says, by not funding the pensions according to current law. That's violative of the Budget Reform Act that was passed a couple years ago. He's saving another basically $500 million by shorting local governments on the money they're entitled to as part of their share of the income tax, a deal that goes back to 1969. And again, you can't do that without changing substantive law. So in fact, he should have proposed deeper cuts. Now, the question in my mind, does he really believe in this? Does he really believe, for example, that it's some of these programs that help poor people, some of the most vulnerable in our society, are non-essential? At the same time, he can give a $30,000 a year non-bid consulting contract to a supply-side guru from out of state?
And that's the big question. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
No, I was just saying one of the things that you know Charlie talked about the most vulnerable. I think it's worth reflecting on a point that Speaker Madigan made in his news conference after the budget address is that when you talk about some of these programs, they're not just for poor people that you think about. He had this phrase: a lot of these reach very high into the middle class. So whether they're people with developmentally disabled children or whatever it would be, certainly people who take Metro or CTA to work would potentially face a fare hike because of the amount of money that the governor wants to short to the RTA, as well as downstate transportation agencies. So this would be a pain felt not just among the most vulnerable people in society in terms of poor people, but throughout the economic spectrum.
Yeah, I think those are all really, really valid points. I want to try to put this in a little bit of a political context. You talk to Republican leaders and say, hey, this is clearly the first part in a negotiation and a process. We're not going to negotiate with ourselves. We're going to put our hardball proposal on the table, and then we'll see how much we come off it. I certainly hope, I agree with Charlie, that the governor does come off some of this stuff because it really is cold-hearted. The RTA up the cuts in mass transit were just mentioned. That's going to translate into a fare hike up here. Those agencies don't have that kind of flexibility in their budget. That's going to really hurt some people. What we're going to find out is how big of a price is Brown are going to demand to get behind some kind of a revenue enhancement, be it the service tax, taxing retirement incomes on the table, too. Apparently, he's going to play pretty hard, or at least that's what his people are suggesting. Not only does he want a fair amount of these cuts, he also wants some changes that will drive organized labor through the roof on workers' compensation and unemployment insurance and so forth. It's not going to be an easy year.
Now, one thing we've seen in the governor has talked for some time on the campaign trail and since being elected, he has alluded to his support of a sales tax on services. You've even heard the business community, the State Chamber of Commerce in particular, kind of making it sound like they'll come off the dime in their opposition to this. So why did Bruce Rauner avoid mentioning or avoid proposing any type of tax increase in this budget message?
Well, because of
one
what
reason
just
that
said,
I would suggest is that, again, under the budget law, he can't count on that money. What he could have done is what Jim Thompson did back in 1983 when he also proposed a budget that had deep cuts, although nothing in comparison to the current governor's proposal. And it was labeled as a bloody stump budget, a doomsday budget. And Thompson, at the same time, asked for an increase in the income tax and said, look, if we don't increase income tax rates, these services have to be cut. And the legislature responded, and we passed a temporary income tax increase. So I would argue it was really not incumbent upon the governor to propose tax increases at this point. And politically, I think what the Republicans would like to see would be the Democrats be the ones to come forward with the tax increase proposals.
Well, and that's an interesting back and forth because you heard from Senate President John Cullerton that he basically wants Rauner to be the one that does it. It's who's going to wear the jacket for both the cuts and who's going to wear the jacket for any sort of revenue hike, for any additional taxes. But I think it's obvious that this is at least in part, and we don't know where Rauner stands exactly. He was very equivocal when he was on the campaign trail about just where he stood on issues. He apparently did, you know, in this very same budget address as he made all of these cuts, nonetheless talked about continuing the child care assistance program, this subsidy for low-income parents to help get their kids into daycare right now as a budget issue. So he, you know, is on one hand trying to say we need money for services and we want to be compassionate, but I just think you can't get away from that this is his poker play, and that's going to continue through May, possibly through June.
Now, Greg, you mentioned you thought Madigan came across a little more strongly opposed or a little more critical of the governor than you expected, because the Senate Democrats have kind of been staking out that territory to be the one throwing rocks this year.
Yeah, I was surprised that he clearly made it very clear that he doesn't believe that this the $2.2 billion that Rauner is counting on from this pension plan is going to be there. It's a very valid point, but he made it nonetheless. And then he clearly said more revenues. Now, that having been said, I've been watching Mike Madigan for 30 years. Charlie's been watching him for longer. I can't figure out what he's going to do and what his end game is. There's some other reasons to think that maybe the speaker is going to work out things with the governor. The governor recently did something that the speaker wanted and proposed putting the Lincoln Museum and Library into an autonomous agency, which is something the speaker wanted. So who's going to know? But his remarks were a little bit different than I expected.
You're listening to State Week. Coming up, we'll be talking more about this week's budget message and some of the reactions to it.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and Greg Hines of Crane Chicago Business. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Greg, I'm kind of interested, some of the interest groups that you keep an eye on in your capacity and their reactions to this budget proposal. Really, a budget proposal that was sparse on details, at least in the speech.
Well, I think the ones that are probably going to scream the loudest and probably have the biggest reason to scream are some of the social service providers. The University of Illinois is going to take a 30% hit. That's certainly serious. It's going to put more pressure on tuition, but they're pretty much capable of standing up and defending themselves. But when you're talking about 50% cuts, 60% cuts in certain kinds of social programs, alcohol, drug treatment, in-home health care, those kinds of things, those really do hit at some of the most needy people in society, and they're not always very well organized and have their act together, and because of that, the politicians don't listen to them often as much as they should. But that's one of the groups I'm hearing from, and the other one is the mass transportation folks. I think you'll start to hear some big comments soon out of Mayor Rahm Emanuel up here, assuming he wins his election race without a runoff on Tuesday. He's been pretty quiet here, but this thing hands him $130 million hole or so in his budget. It takes away state support for the Chicago teachers, the Chicago Public Schools pension fund, and it goes after the CTA. He hasn't said much about that yet, but I think you'll see him get involved real soon.
Now, some others that can be a little upset with this will be pharmacies and hospitals, because they'll see possibly less money coming in if this budget were enacted as part of the Medicaid cuts, which would not just reduce some of the services that recipients receive, but reduce those reimbursements that doctors already say are too low.
Yeah, well, this is something that the governor talked about. You know, a few years ago, Democrats and Republicans worked together to pass what they called the SMART Act, which was supposed to be $2+ billion of savings on Medicaid. And then they've slowly kind of come back from some of those changes. One of the things cut at that time was services for adult dental care. And what they found was that by cutting that, they say that people end up in the emergency room. If they don't get that preventative care, it turns into something worse, and then it ends up costing the state more in the long run. So they have restored some of those things over time. There's also this big dispute about eligibility determinations. Republicans really want to see a private company brought in to do that, but the way Governor Quinn's administration managed it, it prompted a union grievance, and they basically had to pull the private company off of there. So, the governor thinks that there are more big savings to be found in the Medicaid program.
One of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when we talk about savings in the Medicaid program, they're always going to be less than the stated amount, in the sense that for every dollar we spend on Medicaid, we generally get 50 cents back from the federal government. So it's not that you can say we're cut Medicaid spending by $500 million, and this is $500 million we can use to spend on something else. It's $250 million that we can spend on something else.
As I've often think on budget addresses, it's essentially the governor giving a speech, and other than getting a platform to kind of state their views, especially when you're against a political party with supermajorities, it doesn't always mean reality. So is it anything more than just that posturing initially, Brian Mackey?
You know, I mean, it strikes me, one of the things that I thought was just kind of interesting as a takeaway from this day is we did finally get to see where some of Governor Rauner's priorities lie, right? We spent the entire campaign wondering, what does this person really believe in? What does he really think state government is for? I mean, he basically stuck very closely to his line about shaking up Springfield and bringing back Illinois, but he was very thin on the details. And then finally, we get this sort of position paper. And I got to say, his budget briefing, which was not unfortunately conducted until after the speech, I did get some insights into the man's thinking about the way government works that I had not heard before about, for example, special funds. It's something that's kind of an arcane topic to the everyday person, but is very important to a lot of lawmakers about how the state manages its money. Apparently, the governor doesn't like the idea of that. He thinks it's all fungible. All money should be pretty much moved around, and you know, state spending is state spending. So, I mean, I do feel like on the one hand, we did get something of an insight into what the governor thinks, and in more detail than we've seen from him, pretty much throughout this period. But, you know, like everyone has said, this is just a starting point in a long negotiation.
Well, I will also add, there's been a lot of question as to what will happen with Illinois' pensions, particularly if the Supreme Court throws out the overhaul mm-hmm. that was passed a couple of years back. And a date for that has been set. The Supreme Court will hear that on March 11th. But we have been asking, you know, what's your plan? What if? What if? And we also learned about that in this budget address. And Rauner says that he's long said he wants some sort of 401k style plan. He keeps an element of that. Basically, he has said that he wants to keep current employees, everything that they've earned thus far is fine, but starting the new fiscal year, you're moving over into tier two, that's the less generous benefit system, and then added this element of maybe you can take some sort of lump sum payout and then move that over to a 401k style plan. There are questions about its constitutionality. Rauner says he thinks it's better than Senate Bill 1. The House Speaker says he thinks it's just the opposite. Senate Bill 1 has a greater chance. And
when
Rauner's
you say Senate Bill 1, you mean the
that's
law,
the big overhaul.
The one they
mm-hmm.
passed. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's significant that we have learned where Rauner stands on this huge issue facing Illinois.
Well, actually, it's kind of a scale back from the stuff he said on the campaign trail about moving mm-hmm. everybody to 401k. And I think the reality is, in the short run, it would be a financial disaster. If you think about it, pensions are funded from three sources of revenue: contributions from employees' paychecks, contributions from the employer, and interest earned on those combined contributions being invested. Now, if you take away the one leg, the employee contribution, you're going to have a huge hole to make up. I'm in the State University retirement system. If I'm switched to a 401k, I'm no longer going to contribute to the State University retirement system, but there's still that unfunded liability out there for the benefits that have been earned to date. And suddenly, one-third of the pillars supporting it goes away. Although, in all honesty, the pillar of the state employee or the state employer contribution hasn't been met probably from day one, which is why we're in the hole we're in.
Well, that's why you got to think Rauner went on this tier two route, right? Because of those questions about the 401k and moving mm-hmm. everybody over.
Yeah,
I think that had been talked about a lot.
Yeah, the term of art for this kind of stuff is transition costs. If you divert the revenue stream that's going into the current system into 401ks, well, then how do you pay off this $111 billion that we owe? I think the thing to watch in the short run here is what the Supreme Court does. I can't overstate how important that's going to be. Mm-hmm. If the court upholds the existing law, that may take the steam out of what Rauner's trying to do, because people can say, hey, we got this plan, it saves all this money, let's let it go ahead. On the other hand, if they decapitate the state plan, they may also decapitate the basis for Rauner's plan, which could be plan B here. I think the court seems to be poised to issue some kind of decision before the key votes on the budget in May. If so, we'll have some real guidance here that's going to direct how this whole thing is going to turn out.
You know, I think whatever the Supreme Court might decide on the existing reform plan, there's no way that you can count on savings, and I think this is what Madigan and Cullerton were trying to point out, count on savings in the current fiscal year from changes to the pension systems that may be enacted sometime in May. You know that there is going to be a lawsuit filed. No way that lawsuit is going to be resolved before the end of the fiscal year.
Look at how long we've been
working on this pension reform that was passed when? Back in 2013.
Yeah.
So it's been more than a year already, and we have no idea when the Supreme Court will finally render its opinion.
I think you're probably right, Charlie, but they could give some, depending on how they phrase it and what they say, they could give some real hints as to what might be acceptable if SB1 is not.
Well, I'm not sure that the court is into giving lots of hints. That's certainly not their track record.
You may well be right. We'll find out.
Well, and if you're looking for hints, you can look at the decision that they gave about subsidized health care last summer. That was a pretty clear hint that, as Amanda referred to it, Senate Bill 1 is not going to clear the judiciary bar.
We'll take a few minutes here in the final part of the show for some notes from the field. We'll start with Amanda Venicky.
Well, we will have a new state representative, Avery Bourne. She's a 22-year-old law school student. She's the replacement for former Representative Makeit, Wayne Rosenthal, who's now heading up the Department of Natural Resources. And Republicans are saying they've got a lot of confidence in her. She'll be the youngest member, but there's a whole lot of speculation that this was a kind of a rounder pick so that he'll have an easy Republican vote as he tries to push through many controversial areas. Also, briefly, Representative Rich Brower from the Springfield area has also resigned.
And maybe it's another effort of the Rauner camp to take a claim to fame away from Aaron Schock, because he used to be the youngest. Brian Mackey.
Yeah, the Get Covered Illinois, which is the name for the Illinois portal for the federal health insurance marketplace through the Affordable Care Act, announced this week that 347,000 some people have enrolled or re-enrolled in a health care plan through the Affordable Care Act. I thought it was notable during a briefing on the budget, a senior government official said that the Rauner administration did consider opting out of that big expansion of Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act, but decided not to this year. Is what he said. So look for that in the future.
And Greg.
Well, it's the weekend before the mayoral election up here. Rahm Emanuel entered this election season in pretty bad shape, and it is still possible that he may end up short of the 50% plus one vote he needs on Tuesday to avoid a runoff. But there hasn't been a lot of interest, frankly, by Chicago standards in this race. He showed some motion in the polls. All this money he's spending on TV has had an effect. He brought in President Obama the other day to shore up his standing with African-American voters. It's conceivable now, I think, that the mayor could survive, win the whole thing on Tuesday, at which point he becomes free to jump into all the Springfield stuff we just talked about.
And Greg, a follow-up on that. For those listeners, there are several stations around the state that carry this. What are the people in the Chicago media market seeing and hearing in terms of the advertisements right now in this mayoral campaign?
They're hearing mostly positive stuff, although the mayor does have up some ads taking some negative shots at one of his opponents, the County Commissioner Jesus Chuy Garcia. But most of it is good stuff about Rahm. Boy, look at these jobs he created, and look at how hard he's working, and look at how he redid the CTA on the south side, and it's mostly reasons to vote for him.
And I have a note from the field actually this week as well. Back in the governor's inaugural address, he mentioned the upcoming bicentennial for the state of Illinois in 2018, but it may have been an event this year 200 years ago that led to state of Illinois becoming a state when it did. In 1815, in Indonesia, there was a volcano that erupted, Tambora, and it was the worst volcano in history, killing 100,000 instantly and possibly millions with the spread of cholera around the globe. And it led to global climate change, so much so that on the northeastern coast of the United States, the following 2 years, 1816 and 1817, they couldn't get a crop. It was so cold. And that led to westward migration that came through Illinois. And one author and many others have claimed that that is the reason Illinois became a state in 1818, that it would have been several more years down the road before Illinois statehood if not for global climate change, because the Midwest fared pretty well with that weather. They were able to speculate in land and also sell their crops at high prices to those out east. However, 1819, there was an economic collapse. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Greg Hines of Crane Chicago Business. And you can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. You can also search on iTunes, especially iTunes U, for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capital by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.